Thanks for a little bit of your time, Jasmine Kane, international rock superstar, and it's been a while, and there's a lot of people who are ready for a lot of white noise.
Oh, yeah, it's coming, man. It's like, we just finally finished the last of the mixes. This is no doubt just like 2 hours ago, and we're just through them in to get them mastered, and everything is coming down the pipe, so it's all going to be happening. Early next week, we start sending out the pre-orders. And by the time everybody's listening to this, all your pre-orders should be in the mail. So, and if you pre-ordered, lucky you, because we have some interesting news. We actually have a few labels that are interested in our record, which means that we're not going to be doing an official release right away. We are going to be doing what we call a soft release, which is you can buy your album at our shows, and that's it. It will not be available anywhere on the internet. Until we decide to either sign with a label and release it under their name or go forward with an official release ourselves.
Wow, that was a lot of information to take in just a couple of minutes.
You got to get it in. You got to get it in.
Oh, that's awesome news. This is your fifth album. You've been working as an independent, and you've worked awful hard for 11 and a half years now to make a name for yourself. Is this basically what you've been working for all this time?
Is it been that long?
11 and a half years. I looked
Oh, my God. You know, I was listening to that Lady Gaga song where she's like, 6 whole years. And I'm like, that's what I figured it was. I don't know, 11 and a half. Wow.
Yeah. I just looked on one of your pages. You said it says you released The Inside on February 10th, 2004. So,
that's
yeah.
True. Wow. Oh, my gosh. What a long, strange journey it's been. I think, first of all, I can't say anything negative about any of my previous records because they were all done in a very professional manner. I was just at a different point in my life when I wrote them. I think my songwriting has matured in a great deal. And I think the songs probably have a lot more, you know, they relate to a lot more people now than they would have back then. So I think the songs are a lot better. I understand the concept of writing, you know, and hooks and things like that, all the different things that you look for, you know, because when I moved to Nashville in 2003, you know, I didn't have any concept of how to do an album at all. I'd never been in a studio before. So it was quite a learning process. And through all the years, I've just gathered all the information from everyone that I've worked with that does this like on a day-to-day basis and knows how it's done. And I kept all the information, and I think this is by far the best album I've ever done. I know that every time we release an album, we try to outdo the one before, and I can't always say that we did that, you know? But this one, I can say with complete certainty that we've outdone anything we've ever done previously, by far, by a long shot.
Well, now, this has been a work in progress, and you've been working for several months to get to this point for the release of the album, and it all started the recording process in a place called the Sound Emporium, and the people who have recorded in that building, it is an extensive amount.
Have you seen the list?
Yeah, I went to their Facebook page, and they'd say 20 years ago this happened, 30 years ago this happened, and the list of names.
Crazy.
That you're sharing a studio with is just incredible.
That's a very, very famous studio. In fact, we were up in, like, Green Bay, Wisconsin, and we were going through this, like, vinyl store, like, this old vinyl store. It was called, like, what was it called? Rock and Roll Rant. It sounded like a Tom Jones vinyl. And we were looking at the cover of it and kind of and joking about it. And we turned it over, and it was recorded at Sound Emporium, Nashville, Tennessee. I'm like, oh, my God, man. There's so many people that have recorded at this studio, you know? Robert Plant did his whole thing with Alison Krauss, their duo.
Yeah.
Stuff. I mean, it's just been like crazy amazing artists to record there. And we were lucky enough to get to record in both rooms. There's two rooms there, the A room and the B room. And the A room is like the like high end, super sweet, like high, you know, large budget type of room. And it's really impressive. But the B room gets all the vibe. So, like, you know, the drum tracks and stuff are really live there in the B room, and you feel a lot more, like, energized in there for some reason. So, I mean, both rooms were, like, incredible, but, you know, we definitely did our best work of any other studio we've ever worked in Sound Emporium, for sure. had a great feel.
You had somebody come in to help along the process. I guess you can call him your producer. And this is a guy a lot of people would know, former Cage the Elephant guitarist Lincoln Parrish. How was it like working with him, and what did he help bring to the table during the process?
Lincoln was actually really instrumental in the beginning when it was coming to song choices, you know, trying to decide which songs we did on the album. He's really young. He's 24 years old, and he has worked with some of the best producers in the world. So he's got a really great start at being a producer in his own right. He had a lot of great suggestions early on. And it just kind of seemed like as the project went on, we kind of lost him. Like, he got involved in another project, and we didn't really see him much anymore. So Mills and I kind of picked up the slack and continued producing from that moment on. One of the most important things is deciding which songs go on this record, and he was definitely there for that, and helping us to narrow down what it is that we would actually be recording and which songs have the most marketability.
You've had only one, I think one song in the past where you've had a guest join you for the song, and that was kind of, you did a song originally, and I'm not remembering the song right off the top of my head, but you had a guy come back in and sing other parts with you. But this album, you've got lots of help, and including somebody you've really wanted to sing a song with for a long period of time. Tell me about Michael Starr of Steel Panther.
Well, I am a huge fan of Steel Panther. And Michael Starr, which is his real name is Ralph Payne, but he is an amazing vocalist. He's done a lot of projects throughout his years. So, you know, Ralph is on there, and he sang his part right before Steel Panther was leaving the next morning to go on their Australian and European tour.
Wow.
And, I mean, he was like, okay, I'm going to get one shot at this, so it's either going to be cool and you're going to use it, or it's going to suck. And sorry, you know, I'm not going to be in the country. So, and I'm like, okay, we got one shot, like, fingers crossed. We sent the tracks to him. He went into his home studio, did the parts, sent them back to me. And we pulled up the tracks, and I was like, oh my God, he just nailed it. He's just a ridiculously good, great singer. I mean, he just, it's sickening. It's effortless for him to do it. And he hammered them out instantly. He's like, yeah, I'm going to take my kids to school, and I'm going to try to lay down this track, you know? Unbelievable. I get it back, and I'm just, like, kind of not really expecting much. And I'm like, what can the guy do in, like, an hour, you know? It's kind of a lot to ask. And he blew our mind. He blew everybody's mind. And as soon as he started singing, like, even Mills Logan, who helped me produce and engineer this, just sat there and looked at it and go, oh, my God, the guy killed it. He's just a great singer. And they sold out Wembley Stadium. Like, they're in London, and they sell out Wembley. And I'm just sitting there going, oh, my God, that guy just sang on my record.
And which song is that, so people will know which one to look for?
The song's called Fall to Rise.
Oh, the one at the very end.
Written by David Michael Thomas and Paige Logan and myself. And holy cow, killed it. We also feature a guitar player named Charlie Parrett. And he is, like, one of the most famous guitar players in South America.
Wow.
So, unbelievable guy. You got to check him out because he's got, like, 500,000 YouTube followers. It's crazy. He used to tour with a band called Cobra and the Lotus, metal band that was managed by Gene Simmons. So.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, he knows a couple things.
Yes.
He does some stuff.
Well, you've got 11 songs on the album. And three songs a lot of your fans will know and love. 1995's on there. Nightingale, which has not been on any of the previous albums. Well, you had the acoustic.
We had it for a download.
Right. And then Hole. I think you told me at one point in time, Hole was going to be kind of this hybrid mix that you've been performing on stage a couple of times. So what can we expect on the three songs that might be a little different than the songs that we've heard before?
1995 has a lot more of a live feel. We, you know, sped it up quite a bit. We changed to the guitar part. But it feels literally like you're, like, standing out in front while we're playing it. It's a lot more high energy. So it's fun in that respect because it gets your attention. Nightingale, we actually changed the guitar solo in it to make it more cohesive to the rest of our album. So, as you know, Jeff Parin, my previous guitar player, and Paige Logan and I wrote that song, and that's Jeff performing on the original track. But the track was also 6 minutes long, which no radio station really wants any part of because it's too long. They usually like to be under 4 minutes. So we shortened the song, made a radio edit, and we featured our guitar player, Benjamin Johnson, on the lead guitar part instead. So changed that up a little bit. And then with Hole, you've heard the acoustic version of that before on our Modern Day Gypsy album. But if we've been doing it live as this, like, anthemic rock, you know, medley. And it's incredible. And we really just kind of brought that along with us on this album. You know, we obviously had to shorten it somewhat. But the song is every bit as, like, intense as we do it live. So I that's probably one of my favorite songs on the album.
You were I was fortunate enough to go down to Nashville one night, and I got to hear three of the songs in their raw version. But when I heard one, the very first thing that came out of my mouth about midway through, if I quoted this right, I think the words were, "This is a hit."
That's going to be the single, right? And I'm like, you got it.
Break Even is going to be the song we're going to be debuting on Monday. And thank you for that, by the way. And tell us about Break Even, because I really think, I haven't heard the final version yet, the mastered version, but it really is a great song. And I heard you perform it live for the first time ever at that little place in Nashville.
Yes.
It's a good song.
Pete Logan and I have been writing together since, like, the beginning of my career. She and I just have, like, an amazing chemistry when it comes to songwriting. And that song was one of three songs that were written on our very first songwriting session to prepare for this album. We wrote that song, we wrote Into the Gray, and one other song. Two of the three songs made it on this album. And we had, neither one of us had sat down to write a song in years prior to that. So, I mean, she was working in her country duo at the time, and she wasn't doing any writing of that. Of course, the last record that I did was Modern Day Gypsy, in like 2012, I haven't written a song since then. You know, we were just kind of got together. We were longtime friends, and we just said, man, I feel like my creativity is being stifled. I know I got to do this album. We both sat down and talked about, like, maybe we've just said all we have to say, you know? Maybe we just don't have anything left to say. They were done writing. And I was like, you know, I just refuse to believe that. I just refuse to believe that we have nothing left to contribute. And we started kind of like brainstorming like where we are in our lives and what's changing for us and how our lives are growing and how we're becoming more mature in our decisions and how we react to things and stuff like that. And then, you know, this song just kind of came out. It was like, it just kind of fell out and it wrote itself very quickly. And we were super high on it because we just, you know, here we are having this long talk about how we're not sure we're even cut out to do this anymore. And then, bam, three songs. And, like, you know, then we just sat there just going, okay, yes, we're supposed to write. And we did. And we continued to write for the rest of the record. Break Even is basically just a song of, you know, a mature breakup, just saying, hey, you know, this isn't working out for me. You're not happy. I'm not happy. And we just avoid all the drama and, you know, the crazy name calling and just kind of go our own ways and be cool with that and just wish each other well. You know? So it was just kind of like a more mature look at things than I've really ever had before. So.
And one more quick thing on the album before we turn to some other stuff. Your band members and some of their family have heard you had the band listening party a couple nights ago from the day that we're recording this conversation. And everybody is saying the word wow is being used a lot. So I think the folks are really going to enjoy this album once it goes between their eardrums.
Nothing makes me feel better than sharing the final project with the people that I love and call my family, my band family. And, you know, I mean, my boys, Benjamin Johnson and Zach Ballard, I mean, they play in the band. They're phenomenal players, great guys. But we're all friends, you know. I mean, we're actually friends. We would call each other and tell each other something that happened, you know, with our day or, like, what we're excited about. And, of course, Kevin Devout has been with me through the entire process. And a huge contributor to everything from the songwriting to, you know, the instrumentation ideas all the way through to the artwork and design. So, I mean, he's held my hand through the whole thing and put up with my ups and downs. He said he just yelled temper at me.
And ice storms. And ice storms.
Yeah, we have some of that, too. Yeah, he's like my new driver, so that he can stress out, man. Now his butthole puckers when we drive instead of mine. Great. It's on you, man. But also what's so cool is that, you know, we've got both of the boys. Benjamin is actually engaged to Amber Thomas, and she's fantastic. And that's what I mean. And Zach is dating Shanna, and both girls are, like, so excited about the project, so supportive. This is totally unlike anything I've ever been involved in. You know, there's always that conflict of, like, the musician that wants to be at home versus the one that wants to be on the road. And it's hard to, like, you know, like, keep both sides happy. But these girls are so supportive when the guys have to go out on the road. And they're the first ones to jump in when they can get the time off work and head out on the road with us to help do whatever needs to be done. So, I mean, I can't say enough good things about them. They're all super supportive, and that means everything.
Speaking about on the road, one other person we haven't mentioned yet is someone you've been on the road with, and I think he helped contribute a little bit in this project. Jeff LaBar from the famous rock group Cinderella that we play over and over and over on KTG. you've had quite the fun year with Jeff, and it all started with a video, and you played bass on his video, and it's just blossomed from there over the last several months.
Yeah. We've gotten to know Jeff a lot better over the year. Ben is a great dude. He's so much fun, and he's hilarious. I always tell him, like, the guy can cook, the guy cracks jokes all day long. I'm like, you know, this music thing, you get tired of it or whatever. You can always host your own cooking show and stand-up comedy. The guy is hilarious. And we've all, like, in the band now, we've all adopted his, like, language. Now we all try to imitate him. And, you know, he has these certain things that he says. Like, something goes wrong, he's like, oh, no. Oh, my God. And we all have to, like, imitate that. So that actually became something that took over the whole studio, like, for the entire recording process. Here's the engineer, you know, finding, like, some kind of bad edit on something. And he's like, oh, no. And we all started laughing because it all stems from Jeff LaBar. And he came in, and we did any songs kind of last minute. He didn't have a lot of time to prepare. But he came in gracefully and just sat down and, like, plugged all his stuff in. He's like, what do you want me to do? I'm like, play something on this song. And he nailed it. It was ridiculous. And he came in and he took the rock star stance and, like, the wallet chain swinging, and he's, like, wailing on this guitar part. And we're all just standing back there going, holy cow, man, he really brought it. And then he gets done, and he did two songs because he knocked out the first one so fast. We just decided, man, you want to play him another one? He's like, yeah, man, hit me. So we gave him another one, and he rocked through that one super fast. And then he, like, sat down and cracked a fourth light and was like, all right, am I done? I was like, I guess so, man. Holy cow. Just blew me away. It was so great. And of course, our engineer, Mill Logan, was just like, oh, my gosh, the guy from Cinderella, the guitar player from Cinderella just played on our session. Yeah, we grew up with Cinderella. And to have him playing on our record is kind of surreal. That a great friend and a great player and just always there, always excited, always supportive. He's the best.
We've talked about the band members, and I can't have an interview without talking about what just happened for your drummer. He was involved in a competition, the Evans Drumheads Heavyweight Tournament. He did okay.
He did okay, you know, for a guy.
He won it.
He won. He totally won, yeah. We were so down there, and he was really actually completely surprised by that. Because he's not a contest kind of guy. He doesn't enter contests. But he decided to try it out because he wanted to try these new drum heads. And they sent him a set of heads, one for the snare and one for his kick drum. And then he submitted a video. And he did his video. Actually, we recorded it that night you were there at the end. But the quality didn't turn out well enough.
Right.
So he ended up re-recording it and submitted it. And they did it like bracket style. So there were 16 finalists. And he was just shocked to be a finalist. And then he won his first round. And he was like, oh, my gosh, I can't believe it. And then he won his second round, and he was like, this is crazy. Like, that's as far as I'm going to get. Not, you know. But, hey, what a great ride. And then he won his third round and ended up in the championship. And he was like, I'm totally cool with that. I'm totally cool and blown away and excited to be here. And, you know, it was a fan voting thing. And so we promoted it on our Facebook pages and Twitter and all that. And the fans are really the reason that he won that. Because everyone voting, that's what pulled him ahead. And they announced him the winner of this competition right in the middle of Daytona Bike Week for us this year. So we had to announce it on stage in front of like 5,000 people that he was the winner. And I mean, he was so excited and overwhelmed. Like, couldn't believe it.
And he both he and Ben are just, they have brought so much to your live show. It's just a trio, as we've talked before. But just the three of you and the things that you do on stage just really will take people back. They can't, you just can't believe sometimes it's three people on stage doing what you do.
You know, it's actually funny that you say that, because while we were in Daytona, Kevin Bebout's original band, Full Devil's Jacket, was playing like a block down the street. The whole band came up to see us on our show because our show was so long, you know. So they came up after they were finished and watched our show. And one of the guys from Full Devil's Jacket just stood there and was staring at us, and he said, this is by far the fullest sounding three-piece band I've ever heard in my life. Like, it is just mind-blowing how much sound is coming out of us. And we don't use anything, you know, to fill it. It's just us. But it's a really great compliment. It's probably one of the best compliments, because some of my favorite bands in the world were power trios, like King Vex. And I love power trios.
Let's talk about video real quick. You've had one video since the last time you were on the air with us. How cool was it to die at the end of a music video? Was that not a fun experience or what, doing Nightingale?
Everybody's telling me, they're like, you know, you got to stop killing people in your videos.
Well, yeah, that's true.
I was going to be the subject on this one, and I was like, I don't know, man. I was cool with the whole idea, but, you know, I wrote the script, and I was all about it until I saw the font that I had to die in.
Yeah.
And then I was like, oh, God. And Jeff LaBar's words, oh, no. Like, full of some kind of black something, I don't know. And it smelled so bad. And it was in my mouth. It was in my ears. And I was trying so hard not to choke on it while I was laying there dead. And I held his line. They're like, hold it. I can hear him because my ears are under the water. I can hear him yelling at me to hold. And then I finally just like, I can't stand this water in my mouth that is black and I want it out, you know. I figured I'd be growing something out of my ears or something after coming out of there. But the video itself was filmed at the Craig Thought Mansion here in Hendersonville, Tennessee. And it's haunted, really haunted. So, especially after you do something like a video or a photo shoot or something like that, apparently that really increases the activity, the paranormal activity.
Wow.
So, the guy that cleans the place and maintains the property, he looks after the place. Apparently, he gets quite a few books are thrown at him often, you know, furniture moving, doors slamming closed and all that. But apparently this ghost likes to throw things at him. So he was a little nervous about us filming our video out there because he wasn't looking forward to the abuse he was about to receive.
Well, the ghost didn't get any camera time or get credit at the end, so I imagine
actually,
he would be.
He said the ghosts always make an appearance. So we're going back to the video like super slow and we're looking for it. In one particular part, I think that I see it, is during the Spot Hills of Poppin' is doing their circus freak. You see a shadow there just for like a quick minute. I think that's where the ghost was. We have to go back and look at it time and time again and try to find out where the ghost made appearance. We have to go back now and slow down all the frames and look for it.
There you go. I'm going to put it up on my big screen and go frame by frame, see if I see a ghost now. You Tales on the Road, you always have good wild adventures. And once again, you took a trip overseas. I believe it was in September. You went to Germany. It was a pretty big deal, but the trip didn't go so good, did it? There's something about the luggage, wasn't it?
Well, there's a lot of stuff, really. I mean, I was supposed to fly out, so I was so excited. I was going to be there for, 5 days. Could not wait. Went to the airport in Nashville, and they delayed my flight. And then they couldn't get me on another flight in time to catch my connection. So they put me on a different airline. So they had to rescue my luggage from their airline, and I wasn't allowed to check in to the other airline until they had located my luggage and had checked it in through their airline. Luckily, they did that 1 minute before they were closing the gate. So I was able to get on that plane. It flew me to Washington, D.C., and from there I was supposed to get on my connecting flight and head overseas to Germany, to Frankfurt. And hilarious, this is so funny. Finally, I learned why my flight was delayed. My second flight that I got on, I made it 1 minute before they closed the terminal, but then we were delayed. And the reason we were delayed was because the pilot had apparently ran into something and bent one of the wings.
Oh, goodness.
So they got us all off of this flight. So now I'm super late. We're delayed again. I still haven't made it to Washington, D.C. I'm still in Nashville. So they get me on another flight, and I'm on my way to Washington, but I'm going to have exactly 22 minutes from the time we touch down to when I have to get to my other gate. Oh, and the flight attendant completely lied to me and said the gate was right next to us. So I'm like, cool, I can make it. Well, it wasn't. It was all the way across the whole terminal. I had to take, two trains. So it was like a true test. Like, it was like Marine Corps training. I got all my stuff strapped in my back. I'm running. I mean, that was a sweaty mess. I got there, and two people checked their tickets and ran through the gate, and I went running up right behind them, and she shut the door and said, sorry.
Oh, no.
And I'm like, you got to be kidding. So then they sent me all the way to the other side of the terminal to, see what my options were. And when I got there, and I'm still breathing hard and sweating and gross. So I get there, and they say that, they can't get me there until, tomorrow, maybe tomorrow night. So I'm like, oh, my gosh, what am I going to do? So I asked them if there was another airline that I could take, and they put me on Turkish Airlines. So now I'm running to try to make my flight on Turkish Airlines. And I run all the way there. I get there right as they're boarding. They have a ticket for me, thank God. I get on the plane, and, I mean, it's just like I am the only one of kind on this plane, and we're not flying to Frankfurt, we're flying to Istanbul.
Oh my goodness.
So now I end up in Istanbul. Of course, my phone doesn't work overseas, so I have no way to communicate with anyone. I'm in Istanbul. I can't tell where I'm going or what any of the signs say. I've got to find my flight. So somehow I managed to do that. I got on another flight. I end up in Frankfurt late that night on day two. Now, this is day two.
Right.
Because I've been flying all night long. So now I get to Frankfurt, and I call, the Warwick facility, I was there to visit for Warwick basis. And they were under the impression that I was going to be there at, 10 o'clock a.m., not 10 o'clock p.m.
Oh, no.
So they did not have a shuttle there waiting. They were like, we were there in the morning, but you didn't show up. I'm like, no, p.m. But they run on, military time.
So
I end up I don't know what to do. So I catch a cab. I go find, a hotel. And I stayed in that hotel. And then the next day, they're like, I'm trying to call them. And they're like, where are you? And I'm at a hotel. And they're like, where is this hotel? I'm like, I don't know. I'm not from Germany. Here's the address. They're like, where's that? I have no idea. Turns out I was quite a ways away from the airport. So anyway, they ended up, long story short, they end up sending me a shuttle. They picked me up there at the airport. And then I end up going to the Warwick facility. I have no luggage. I have only the toiletries and the things that I have with me on the plane. And as soon as I arrive at Warwick, they're like, oh, good, you're here. Just in time for your photo shoot.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, I got to do a photo shoot with their new product, their LWA-1000 face mask. And I'm like, oh, my God, please, I'm begging you, give me a day to at least try to find some clothes. So my luggage didn't arrive for two more days. It arrived the morning of the day I was leaving.
Unbelievable.
But, Germany was awesome.
Let's turn our attention real quick to a more pleasant scenario. Back on January the 11th, I got to see probably a once-in-a-lifetime event It's something you put a lot of hard work, a lot of your love into. You had a concert or a benefit for one of your former drummers, Brian, and it was one of the most wonderful nights that I'll ever remember. And you shed a lot of tears and had a lot of laughs, and that was a night probably you'll never forget.
Yeah, that one's going to stick with me. I mean, Brian was really, it was him and I from the beginning. So he was the heart and soul of this project. We came here from South Dakota together to tackle the world, and everything we did, we started when we got here. It was just him and I. I've never had anybody that believed in me that hard, that he's willing to quit everything he had and knew. We put out that first album and traveled the world together for 3 years. Unfortunately, just real hard time with drinking. And I told him to take a year off and come back, and we tried again in a year. And a year came and went, and he just stayed. And he did really well. He got married 3 months before he passed away. So at least he got to experience that. It was something he always wanted. You know, there wasn't a day that went by without that he didn't live life. You know what I mean? I can honestly say that, like, that's a guy that never thought, oh, I'll do that tomorrow. Like, he never lived that way. It was like, I feel like doing this, and I'm going to do it right now. And what was so cool about that night was that everybody came together to honor him and his memory. And pretty much all of the players that have ever been in my band, with the exception of, like, two, showed up. And they all got on stage. They all played. They all told stories and remembered, you know, things about him. And it was, like, so great to, like, have your extended band family all there together.
And all those players up there in that second set, when you invite all the I saw your first touring guitarist, and it was just David. That was the first time I actually saw David Michael Thomas play on stage, and it was a wild night, and that could have gone on forever, and I think everybody would have stayed till everybody just passed out. But now the new album is out. You're getting ready to get back on the road, and it starts Saturday the 11th in Indianapolis. I've got my ticket. People probably want to go online and get their tickets, because, as you usually do, getting ready to put on a big show. And like you said, it's changed a little bit, I think, since from what you said at the beginning. So get ready for some rock and roll and a lot of white noise.
Yeah, it's going to be incredible. I'm really stoked. The first show is in Indianapolis. It's at Southport Bar and Grill. And from the looks of it, it's going to be sold out. It's pretty close right now. So if you haven't got tickets and you're in the area, I would recommend making it happen soon. I think you can contact the bar directly or go on their Facebook and send them a message, and they'll make sure and get you hooked up.
Do you want to play a quick game?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Let's do a
game. All right. This is called Guess the Jasmine Cain Song. Do you think you can do good at this?
I would hope so.
I'm going to give you a little snippet or a few words or a sentence of one of your songs and see how well that you know your own or your library.
Yeah.
I was born in the summer of 79. I'll make the first one real easy.
That is pretty easy. That's 1995.
All right, what about this one? When this comes up in a song, it always gets me. Blue four-door Saturn.
Ooh, wow, yeah. That's called Nightmare.
Yeah, very good.
And it's, you know, David Michael Thomas wrote that song, and it's, wow, that's a powerful song. I remember the first time I heard it, I was like, I'm not.
Yes. All right, I took the trash outside today.
Enigma.
Very good.
Oh, yeah. That was probably the best recorded song on that whole album. I loved that song.
Yeah, we talked about that a couple interviews ago, how that all came about. How about this one? You took a bite out of my heart.
Land Shark.
Now, here's an easy one for you. Still ride faster than your guardian can fly. Everybody ought to know this one.
Yeah, that's a classic. That's Highway Prophet.
All right. I need to feel your love running through my veins.
Sweet, you stole me. Yeah.
All right, this one should be an easy one, too. His lips I've tasted, they've left me wasted.
Oh, yeah. Whiskey kiss.
All right. And you'll finish this one. Who knows where we'll be tomorrow?
Oh, my gosh. That is a powerful song. Time is borrowed.
Very good. Your company is a waste of time. You drink yours and I'll buy mine. I think I've got the words of that correct.
Mm-hmm. That's the inside. That was written about David Michael Thomas.
Oh, okay. All right. Sun-kissed skin so hot, melt your popsicle.
Oh, we're doing some Katy Perry action, are we?
Oh, I'm sorry. I got my list mixed together. Very good, by the way. You know Katy Perry. All right.
Well, I'm a Rain Man of lyrics.
All right, one more real quick. I don't care what you'll say, I'll never give up.
That was actually a wild card on our album. It's called Not Gonna Turn Back.
Ah, you do know your songs.
And it was actually it used to be a Christian rock song. And we rewrote it completely. So it was kind of a wild card. Like, we weren't sure we were going to cut it, but yeah, last minute we ended up putting that on the record. So yeah, it's cool.
Ah, very good. You win. Bravo.
I win. What do we win?
We'll come up.
The satisfaction of knowing that I'm the Rain Man of this.
Back on the road, new album, Life is Grand, isn't it?
It is. It's fabulous.
All right. If anybody wants any information, we've got all of our stuff, including this interview and your past interviews and all the links to everything on our website. But if somebody wants to get the new album, buy some coffee or anything like that, what do they need to do?
Here's what I think. And since it's Monday and mm-hmm. we're doing this Monday,
mm-hmm.
I am going to extend my pre-orders for this week only up until the 11th.
Okay.
So you can still pre-order White Noise on our website, jasminekane.com, until Saturday the 11th.
Oh, very good. You're all over Facebook, and give us the whole works of where we can find you.
Facebook is Jasmine Kane Rocks. Twitter is at Jasmine Kane Rocks. And, of course, you've got my website at jasminekane.com. Got all my links to everything everywhere from that.
And keep going to Reverb Nation to keep making you number one in Nashville.
Just going to say that. You can always go to Reverb Nation. I always post our new songs on there. You can listen to the songs. You can read the lyrics. You see all of our latest videos, new photos, everything. I can throw it all up on Reverb Nation. And the more you guys visit it, then the higher our rankings stay in Nashville. We were number one for 2 weeks.
That's great, isn't it?
The week before and the week of Daytona Bike Week. So that was the longest stretch we've ever had on that. Awesome.
You are very awesome. Can't wait to hear the whole album. Can't wait to see you on the 11th and wherever else you're going to be. So good luck, continued success, and we'll talk to you soon down the road and on the air.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks, Jasmine.
Okay. Bye-bye.